Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit. Now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
I guess let me ask you, sometimes there are neighborhoods that have that are kind of cut-throughs to go to other main streets. What was your neighborhood like in that way? Was there a lot of traffic of people trying to cut through to get to other thoroughfares?
No, it was a series of residential side streets winding and into inside the residential community.
I'm going to put up Exhibit 3 here. Pull it out a little. Does this sort of show that neighborhood with this being Phelps Street where you lived?
Yes.
So when you're talking about this neighborhood, there's no easy way to get from Pecos to Fry Road, right?
Correct.
Since you lived in this neighborhood for a couple of years, did you see some of the same vehicles parked on your street all the time?
Yes.
And so you sort of knew which ones would belong to your neighbors?
Generally, yes.
Okay. I'm going to put Exhibit 1 up here. Not sure if you're able to make out sort of a little house shapes. Uh, Are you able to see those house shapes up there?
Yes.
Okay, so we see this is 3875 East Phelps. Where was your house? Was it on the same side of the street, on the other side of the street?
3870 would have been on the same side.
So on the same side of the street as this, and where was it in relation to that?
One to the left, looking at it.
Okay, so this is Phelps. Are you on this side of the street or this side of the street? The upper or the lower?
I'm sorry. I was on upper, third house in from right there, yes.
Okay, so here.
Yes.
All right. So kind of across and a little catty-cornered from 3875?
Yes.
Perfect. Michelle defends a couple exhibits, 5 and 7. Back in October of 2019, were you working?
No.
Did you have sort of still a schedule of what you would do most mornings?
Yes.
I want to bring your attention to October 2nd of 2019. Did you leave your house that morning around 8:40?
Yes.
Do you recall where you were going?
Yes.
What were you going?
I was going to the EOS gym on Higley and Pecos for a 9 o'clock appointment.
Okay. How far away, how long would it usually take you to get there?
You know, 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay. So you gave yourself a little room to get in there and get ready?
Yes.
At that time in 2019 at this residence, did you usually park in your garage or your driveway?
The driveway.
Okay. I'm going to put up, if I can have my paralegal approach with exhibits 5 and 7.
Go ahead.
So if you can look at these two photos and let me know if you recognize these exhibits, what they're photographs of.
Yes.
Are those photos of sort of the street and neighborhood where you lived on Phelps back in 2019?
Yes.
The state will move to admit exhibits 5 and 7.
No objection.
They're admitted.
You told us that when you lived on this street that sometimes you'd see the same vehicles there. Was there any vehicle on sort of the opposite side of Phelps Street that you would regularly see and you would have to pay attention to when you were exiting your driveway?
Yes.
What was that?
There was a van owned by my neighbor who parked generally across from my driveway or a little off.
Okay. I'm going to put up exhibit 5. Do you see a van in this photograph?
Yes.
Is that the van you're talking about?
Yes.
So this white van here?
Yes.
Are you able to show us in this photograph or describe for us where your house or driveway was located?
The house is what's seen at the far left of the image, the beige-colored house, and that's and the driveway would be right where you're indicating.
Okay. So this was your driveway right here?
Yes.
And so you would often have to kind of pay attention to this white van so you didn't go out and bump right into it?
Yes.
On the morning of October 2nd, did you get in your car to leave and notice any other vehicles that morning?
Yes.
I'm going to put up exhibit 7. In this photograph, is your driveway here?
No.
It's one over.
Yes.
Okay, so we can't see your driveway. This would be your neighbor's house.
Yes.
Where did you see another vehicle that stood out to you the morning of October 2nd around 8:40 in the morning?
parked in front of the white van, nose to nose, where that tree is.
So right in this shade area?
Yes.
All right, so when you say nose to nose, the front of the Jeep was to the front of this van?
Yes.
And so the rear of the Jeep would have been along where this driveway was?
Yes.
Did anything about that vehicle catch your attention?
Yes.
What?
I noticed that it was running. It had tinted windows. I didn't see anyone. And it was right across from the back of my driveway.
Okay. So the tinted windows, were you able to see if anyone was inside the vehicle?
I was not.
What kind of vehicle was it that you saw there?
It was a Jeep.
Were you able to tell anything about two or four door?
No.
Do you recall anything about the color?
It was dark.
Okay. And you said the Jeep was running?
Yes.
When we talk about the Jeep being nose to nose, is that sort of the wrong way on the street, parked the incorrect way on the street?
Yes.
Did that also stand out to you?
Yes.
Had you ever seen that Jeep before in your neighborhood?
I don't recall seeing it.
Okay. So it wasn't something you had seen before?
No.
When you were backing out and leaving, did you feel like you needed to take note of anything else of that Jeep?
Yes.
Why?
It seemed out of place, and again, being concerned that it was running, not immediately seeing anybody with that vehicle or in that vehicle, and I was under the impression that nobody was home at the house that it was parked at.
Okay. So here's a car that's running in front of a house that might be empty with dark tinted windows. It seemed a little concerning to you.
Yes.
So because of that, did you do anything as you were leaving?
Yes.
What'd you do?
When I left, I backed out of my driveway so that I was going to be heading in the opposite direction of those vehicles. And I looked in my rearview mirror to look at the license plate.
Okay. So in Exhibit 7 here, were you heading this direction?
Yes.
Okay. So in your rearview mirror, you would have been able to see the back of the Jeep. When you were looking in your rearview mirror, you were able to see the back of
yes.
the Jeep. Yes. What did you look for when you looked in your rearview mirror?
The license plate.
What did you note about the license plate?
That it was a Texas license plate.
So that's sort of the white with black lettering?
Yes.
Were you able to take down a license plate number?
No.
Do you recall the vehicle itself, if there was a tire on the back of it?
I don't recall.
When you returned home after going to the gym, can you describe for us what you saw?
Yes. There were a lot of police vehicles and police personnel on the property, on the street. Access to my street, the way I came back, was restricted. And I had to speak to one of the officers, identify who I was, and indicate where I was going.
Okay. Did you have a police officer come talk to you at some point in the day?
Yes.
And did they ask you about whether or not you had seen anything unusual that morning?
Yes.
And did you tell them about this Jeep?
Yes.
And why did that stick into your mind to tell them?
Well, it was no longer there, and I felt it was, again, out of place or an unusual at that time.
I have no other questions for this witness. Thank you.
Cross-examination.
Thank you.
No questions, Your Honor.
All right, any questions for this witness from any member of the jury? Don't see any questions. You can step down, sir.
If I may go get my next witness. Yeah.
All right. Come on up right up here in front of my clerk, sir. She's going to swear you in.
Can you please state and spell your first and last name?
Sure, my first name is Nolan. It's N-O-L-A-N. My last name is McDermott. It's N-C-D-E-R-M-O-T-T.
Thank you. Raise your right hand, please. You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give me the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
All right, have a seat up here to my left.
Would you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Sure, my name is Nolan McDermott. I'm a sergeant with the Gilbert Police Department.
How long have you been with the Gilbert Police Department?
18 years.
Where do you currently work?
I'm currently assigned to Internal Affairs.
Can you tell us about the different areas you have worked at the Gilbert Police Department over your years of service?
Yes, I've spent a majority of my time on patrol, both as an officer, field training officer, and a patrol sergeant. I've also spent time in our Criminal Investigations Division, where I was a detective over Special Victims Units and our Violent Crimes Unit.
Okay. Now, over the years at the Gilbert Police Department, have police officers, both patrol and detectives, been responsible at times for processing the scenes?
Yes.
Did you have any training over the years on processing scenes?
Yes, both in the police academy and then through training through field training program, and then as well as just training with colleagues throughout various cases.
Back in October of 2019, what unit were you working in?
I was assigned to the Violent Crimes Unit.
And were you a detective in that unit?
Yes.
How long had you been there at that time?
I was with that unit probably only about a year, but I'd been a detective for about 3 years at that point.
Were you on duty on October 2nd of 2019 at around 9:15 in the morning?
Yes.
And were you called out to 3875 East Phelps in Gilbert, Arizona, Maricopa County?
Yes.
What were you called out there for?
I was called out with other detectives initially referenced a shooting.
Okay. And is that common practice for shootings?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall when you arrived at 3875 East Phelps Street, sort of what the scene looked like?
Yes, there was crime scene tape erected. There was several patrol officers out. Looks like they had taped off a crime scene around a particular residence and the street in front of the residence, as well as kind of bordering some homes next to the target residence.
What is the point of crime scene tape?
The point of the crime scene tape is to erect a physical barrier, both for the public to be alert that the police are on scene and conducting an investigation, trying to limit the amount of traffic, meaning both vehicle or people entering that crime scene, to keep it as sterile as possible.
When detectives are sent out to a shooting, are they each given different roles?
Yes, they can be. Each scene might be a little different, but generally we'll divide tasks up to process or investigate.
Okay. Were you assigned a role to process the crime scene?
Yes, I was participating in that.
Were other detectives then assisting you in processing the crime scene?
Yes.
Who were the other detectives who were out at the scene?
Detective Pillar was there and Detective Ferrer was there.
Okay. When you got to the scene, were photographs taken of the street, the vehicle, and any items of evidence?
Yes.
Why are photographs taken of sort of the scene, the street, and the area around there?
To memorialize both the scene and any evidence or any items of evidentiary value either collected or observed at that scene.
Okay. When you go to a scene, do you always know what might be relevant?
No.
So do you take photographs to try to document something in case something becomes relevant later?
Yes.
In this scene, where was the vehicle located when you arrived, the vehicle involved in this shooting?
Yes, when I arrived, the vehicle was in the driveway of the target residence.
And when you say target residence, what do you mean by that?
The residence in which Mr. Boudreau was residing at the time.
Okay. That's the 3875 East Phelps?
That's correct.
As you are photographing this scene, were orange cones, for lack of a better word, used to document the approximate location of where Brandon Boudreau's vehicle was located when it was struck with the bullet?
Yes. Trying to provide a visual of what we thought would be the approximate location.
And so that has to be based upon just his, to the best of his memory.
Yes.
Was the area also looked, or did you look in that area where Brandon had indicated his car was when it was struck to see if maybe any glass or anything had fallen in the road?
Yes.
Did you locate any?
There was a small, looked like glass particle or shard that was in the roadway.
Okay. Was it similar to, well, let me ask you, when you went to the scene and saw the Tesla in the driveway, did you see the driver's side window anywhere?
Yes, the driver's side window was actually in the driveway, just adjacent to the driver's side of the Tesla. It was, the vehicle was parked in facing towards the garage, and the window was adjacent to the driver's side door with the void in the driver's side door where that window would be.
Okay. Inside the Tesla itself, did you observe pieces of the glass that had shattered?
Yes, there was glass shards both inside the vehicle and then outside the vehicle adjacent to the splintered window.
And did those shards that you saw in the road where you put those cones look similar to the shards you saw inside the Tesla and around the door there?
Yes.
When you were looking at the window that was now on the driveway, did you look at it to try to see if there was any impact to it, what caused it or where it shattered from?
Yes, we did. There was a divot or a mark towards the top of the window would be, as if it were raised to the top of the vehicle frame or that door. There was kind of a divot, best way I can describe it, that appeared out of place compared to the rest of the window.
Okay. For the Tesla itself, some cars have doors where there's a metal frame around the glass window. Was there a metal frame around the glass window for this Tesla door?
No, not for where the window would be for the door. The window was kind of by itself where it would extend or rise up into the frame of the vehicle.
I have minus a few exhibits, 6, 8, 10 through 47. If I can have my paralegal approach with those, and have the witness take a look at these photographs. So, Detective, you've looked through Exhibits 6, 8, and 10 through 47. Do you recognize those as photos from the scene on October 2nd of 2019 of the Tesla and the Phelps Street and the area around there?
Yes.
State will move to admit Exhibits 6, 8, and 10 through 47.
No objection.
They're admitted. Did you get the number?
When you are taking photographs of a scene, putting up Exhibit 6 here, do you try to take photographs showing the whole street itself? Meaning not just the one location where the car was or the Tesla itself. You're trying to get the whole area.
Well, yes, that's true. To be clear, I didn't actually take this particular photograph, but when documenting, we were trying to capture the area, give an overview of the scene.
Okay. So in this scene, can you describe for us sort of the directionality we're looking and what we see here?
Yes. The marked patrol unit that's sort of in the center at the very far end of this particular image, that's east, east of the target residence. The Tesla is on the right side of the picture in the driveway, and it is parked facing south. And those cones kind of in the center are also east of the Tesla and the residence.
Were those cones the ones we were talking about in reference to the approximate location of Brandon's vehicle when he was shot at?
That's correct.
Exhibit 8 here, is that sort of a closer version of that?
Yes.
Exhibit 10, in your understanding, Where was the Jeep located?
So the Jeep would be somewhat out of frame from here, but it was our understanding that it would be located kind of on the bottom left of this image.
Okay, so this is the driveway for Brandon Boudreaux's 3875 East Phelps?
Correct.
And so the Jeep was somewhere down here?
Yes.
When you were documenting this, did you understand then, was this meant to be sort of the front of the vehicle and the rear of the vehicle, approximately? And I'm going to put up 12 so we can see a better width of that.
I don't recall if those were marked to present in terms of the vehicle itself and the distance to the front and the back. I don't recall that specifically. The purpose of this was to give us kind of an idea, or at least to memorialize the scene for where we, our best understanding of where that Mr. Boudreaux's vehicle was at when the shooting occurred.
In 14 here, so again, this is at least supposed to be approximately where the Tesla was located?
Correct, and this particular image is from the other direction. So, for example, that patrol vehicle that's pictured in the center of that image, that's to the west of the target residence.
Okay. And so in this photograph, Exhibit 14, where did you understand the Jeep to be located?
Our understanding was the Jeep would have been in the vicinity of the shaded area, where on the south side of that street, parked, I guess, behind or in front of that white van.
I'm going to put up exhibits 18 and see if I can. When you were photographing, or when this was photographing, did you all attempt to sort of document some of those little shards of glass?
Yes, that's correct.
And is that what we see here in Exhibit 18 right there?
Yes.
As well in Exhibit 19 here?
Correct.
Okay. And you said those were similar to the same type of glass you had seen in the vehicle and around the vehicle once it was parked in the driveway?
That's correct.
Was it your understanding, let me see, when you are trying to process a scene, do you get briefed on some of the general facts of the case?
Yes.
What does that mean to get briefed?
More often than not, detectives aren't the first on scene. Generally, a patrol officer would respond to take the initial information, and then upon the arrival of detectives, we would generally get a briefing from those patrol officers on scene with the best knowledge of the information they had at the time.
Okay. So did you understand or know the path of travel of Brandon after this shot was fired?
Yes.
What was your understanding of the path of travel after the shot was fired?
My understanding was Mr. Boudreaux proceeded, continued west on Phelps Street to his first available street to turn on, which was Cole, I believe, and he made a right to go northbound from there.
This is Exhibit 1, sort of a map of that area. So west would be this direction?
Correct.
And then north on Cole.
Correct.
Did you understand that he eventually then came back, sort of making a big loop to return to his residence?
That's correct.
Now, we had talked about the vehicle itself. as a detective and as a patrol officer, had you ever seen gunshots or bullet holes in a vehicle before?
Yes.
And I'm going to go through the photos of the vehicle itself. I'm going to show you Exhibit 21. Can you tell us what we see here?
Yes, this is Mr. Boudreaux's vehicle. It's parked in the driveway facing south. The driver's side of the vehicle is facing away from us in this particular image.
Did you note any damage on the passenger side of Mr. Boudreaux's vehicle?
I did not.
We see in 22 the rear of his vehicle?
Correct.
Did you note any damage there?
I did not.
Were you looking for damage to see if there were any other gunshot holes in this car?
Yes.
Now, as you got to the driver's side, I'm going to put up 23 and then 24, did you notice anything on this vehicle?
Yes. There was damage on the vehicle frame, kind of directly above the driver's side door and where the window would have been.
So I'm going to kind of do some closers up. 26.
Yes, the damage, again, being on that kind of the top end of the vehicle frame above where the driver's side door and window would be.
And 27. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, this is just a closer image of that same damage.
The victim had made a statement to 911 that maybe this was a paint gun that hit him. Did you see any paint or anything that would indicate this was a paint gun?
I did not.
Is this the type of damage you would expect to see from a paint gun?
No.
28, and then I'm going to go into 29. What are we seeing here? We see an A marked on that. What's that for?
That particular marker is just another indication to memorialize the scene. So the prior image was an image without it, and then this image is to mark it, just as another point of reference the damage we were identifying.
As we're looking at this, you were advised, were you advised when you were briefed that as Brandon was driving westbound on Phelps, that the rear of the Jeep was facing towards him, was facing eastbound?
Yes.
And were you advised that he said a rifle came out of the back of the Jeep and then fired a single shot at him?
Yes.
Looking at just the shape of this hole, you said you have seen bullet strikes or bullet holes in vehicles. Did that appear to be coming from front to back?
Yes.
So was it consistent, the damage to the vehicle, to show the bullet had come from in front of the Jeep or in front of the Tesla into the Tesla itself? Does that make sense? Probably not.
The damage I observed and the damage that's documented in this photo is consistent with Mr. Boudreaux's statement of him proceeding westbound with a rifle being pointed towards him, pointed east, and this penetration from that projectile is consistent with his story.
Okay. Now, when we talk about trajectory, what does that mean?
Generally, it's just the direction in which something might travel.
In this case, were you able to determine the exact direction of the rifle barrel out of the rear of that Jeep?
I was not able to determine exactly the direction of that rifle barrel out of the Jeep.
And were you able to determine the exact location of the Tesla in the street?
I was not.
So there was no photos or video cameras to show that?
Correct.
So at best, can you say that the directionality of that hole, that bullet strike into the Tesla, is consistent with it coming from the back of the Jeep?
Yes, based on the information provided to us, it's consistent.
Now, as you were looking at this, and we see in 25 that there's no frame on the top part of this door, so the bullet strike, was that actually into the body of the Tesla itself?
Yes, that's a fair description.
So in order to look for the projectile, what did you guys do?
This particular photograph, right below that penetration point, is some rubber molding that was also damaged. That was consistent with that glass window maybe rising up and extending into the molding as probably part of the feature of the vehicle. So we moved some of that molding around to see if we could try to locate any projectiles.
I'm going to show you some photos from that. This is Exhibit 40. What are we seeing here?
This is some of that rubber molding I had mentioned earlier. There was kind of a groove in there, for lack of a better word, in that molding, where it captured some glass shards, and we did find some fragments, metal fragments, in the that groove within the molding as well.
So what we sort of see in here.
Correct.
Is Exhibit 44 sort of show what you're talking about, where you're trying to pull out all of this molding to look for any fragments of that projectile?
Correct.
And does 45 also kind of show that search where you're pulling that apart?
Yes.
Ultimately, were any fragments recovered?
There were some fragments recovered. This particular image just documents those fragments recovered from within that molding. That was documented earlier as well.
And were those collected and pounded?
Yes.
State has shown defendant 190. You can take a look at Exhibit 190 and let me know if you recognize.
Yes, I recognize it.
And on the back side, inside the clear bag, is there sort of the paper bag that documents that those fragments in there are from this case that we're discussing today?
Yes, the label on this particular bag is the report number referenced this incident.
Thank you. The state will move to admit Exhibit 190.
Any objection?
No objection, Your
Honor. 190 is submitted.
Thank you. Now, as you are trying to recover any fragments, you told us that the window sort of went up into this molding, or into the car frame almost.
Correct.
Given that you only found fragments, was anything done to try to see if any of those fragments or the projectile itself had fallen out at any point?
Yes, we, after kind of learning or being briefed on the path of travel that Mr. Boudreau took in his vehicle following the shooting, we walked that area as well as the area immediately around the vehicle when it was parked in the driveway to try to locate anything additional in terms of projectile fragments.
When we're talking about projectile fragments, these could be teeny tiny little pieces that you're trying to find on the street?
In this particular incident, that's correct.
And now we're talking around a whole block and up to where the pool is?
Correct.
Did you and other officers search that whole area?
Yes, we did.
Were you successful in locating any other fragments?
We were not.
Was a metal detector even brought to try to search across the road and see if you could potentially find any of those fragments?
Yes, we did bring one out to try to locate anything additionally.
Was anything else found?
No.
Now, we had talked about inside the vehicle, and I'm going to show some photos here, 32. What were you documenting here in 33?
This particular image documents what I had mentioned earlier in terms of my observations. This documents some additional glass shards that were located on the floorboard inside the vehicle. That's the driver's seat.
Okay. 34, 35. So the window itself, I know you told us, was mostly together, but small pieces of it broke apart?
That's correct.
And that's the same type of small pieces you saw out in the road by those cones?
It appeared consistent, correct.
Did you see any other of those little shards anywhere else on the road other than where Brandon had indicated he was when his vehicle was shot?
Not that I recall.
Okay. In Exhibit 36 and 37, what are we seeing here?
This is just a particular rod that was inserted to try to give an idea in terms of a general idea of trajectory. Again, to kind of confirm what information we had from Mr. Boudreau reference, where the gunshot had come from in terms of then striking his vehicle. This is really just another visualization of that to memorialize it.
Okay. So again, without knowing, well, let me ask you this. In the back of a Jeep, if someone sticks a rifle barrel out, can they move the barrel at almost basically 180 degrees of angle? Is that yes?
I'm sorry, what were you asking?
If somebody sticks a rifle out the rear window of a Jeep, they could move that rifle barrel in basically 180 different degrees, correct?
Yes.
And you, because there's no video showing that, you can only, you have no way to know the exact angle that that rifle barrel was sticking out.
That's correct.
So this was just to help show the directionality, at least, of how that bullet entered into the Tesla.
That's correct.
Okay. And we see the same thing in 38 and then a closer up in 39?
That's correct.
Now, we talked about the glass piece itself. I have Exhibit 46 up here. And again, we see another sticker or marker with an A on it. What were we looking at there?
This is an image of the driver door window that was in the driveway at the time of our arrival. As I had mentioned earlier, we had noted a divot in the window itself. This particular image is depicting that divot as we've identified it with this marker that appeared consistent with the damage that we observed on the vehicle. Essentially our best estimate of where that strike point in the vehicle would have been to cause the window to shatter.
So when we look at the other edges of the vehicle, you didn't see any similar type of damage where the window has that divot and the more, I guess it being more broken apart.
Yes, that particular divot, again, appeared consistent with what we were observing on the vehicle. So I didn't note anything different on the window that maybe could have accounted for the damage with the window being rolled up in the vehicle.
After processing the vehicle, did other officers look for any type of, or did you ever come back and help look for any type of surveillance cameras that might have caught anything?
Yes, we returned and conducted a kind of a canvas of the neighborhood. Myself and additional detectives did.
Did you personally find any videos that on Phelps Street or any of the surrounding streets that caught anything?
I did not.
During this investigation, did you learn who Lori Vallow was?
Yes.
Did you learn that she had a 2018 Jeep Wrangler with a Texas plate of LWD0997?
I did.
Did you learn that she was, in October of 2019, living in Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes, I did.
Did you learn that her brother, Alex Cox, was also living in Rexburg, Idaho in October of 2019?
I did.
Through different records, did you learn that Alex Cox was residing at 565 Pioneer Road in Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes.
And did you also learn that Lori Vallow was living in that same complex?
Yes.
Did you reach out to local law enforcement in Idaho to help locate and impound that 2018 Jeep Wrangler?
Yes, I did.
When you were investigating this case, had you been advised by Detective Pillar and others that the Jeep, or that Brandon had noted the Jeep had a Texas plate on it?
Yes.
And had you, as part of the investigation, learned that Lori Vallow had resided in Texas previously?
Yes.
Were you advised that Brandon Boudreau had told Detective Pillar on October 2nd that he was aware of an incident in Chandler, Arizona on July 11th of 2019?
Yes.
And in contacting the Chandler Police Department, did you learn that that 2018 Jeep Wrangler with the Texas license plates had been at the residence with Lori Vallow on July 11th of 2019?
Yes.
Did you then write up a probable cause statement and send that to the Rexburg Police Department to help write a search warrant so they could seize and impound that Jeep?
Yes.
And that Jeep being the 2018 Jeep Wrangler that Lori Vallow had with a Texas plate of LWD0997?
That's correct.
Were you notified on November 4th of 2019 that at that time Detective Hermosillo with the Rexburg Police Department had located and impounded the Jeep from 565 Pioneer Road in Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes.
And did you provide that to Detective Pillar?
Yes.
Was he the case agent at the time?
Yes.
And did you leave that to him to deal with processing the Jeep?
Yes.
Without going into what was said, on December 21st of 2019, did you speak with someone by the name of Colby Ryan?
I'm sorry, what date was that again?
December 21st of 2019?
Yes, I did.
Is Colby Ryan Lori Vallow's son?
Yes.
Did you learn that Colby had been given Lori Vallow's blue Nissan Rogue with Arizona license plate CRT2994?
Yes.
Were you provided information as to where Colby Ryan had picked up Lori Vallow's Nissan Rogue?
Yes.
On December 26th of 2019, did you go to that residence?
Yes.
Was that here in Maricopa County?
It was.
Was that in Mesa?
It was.
Who lived at that residence?
I spoke with a Heather Blackmere.
Was it a Hannah?
Or I'm sorry, Hannah, yes.
Did you learn that Melanie Boudreau was now remarried to Miss Blackmere's brother, Ian?
Yes.
And did you know that Melanie Boudreau was Lori Vallow's niece?
Yes.
Was a search warrant obtained for that Nissan Rogue?
Yes.
And was that executed on December 21st of 2019?
Yes, it was.
Were photographs taken of that?
Yes.
shown the defendant exhibits 93 through 98. Approach for the witness to review. Do you recognize those photographs, exhibits 93 through 98?
Yes.
Are they photographs of that Nissan Rogue that you executed the search warrant on that was Lori Vallow's?
Yes.
This is the Nissan Rogue that you had learned about through Lori Vallow's son, Colby Ryan?
That's correct.
And that you had spoken to Melanie Boudreau's family about, that it had been dropped off at?
I'd spoken to Ms. Blackmore, referenced that vehicle.
State will move to admit exhibits 93 through 98.
Any objection?
Just relevant, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, it's relevant both because this vehicle is going to be seen in video in Idaho relating to the self-storage unit where items were stolen.
It's admitted. Those exhibits are admitted.
Thank you. So, exhibit 93, what are we seeing here?
This image is of that said Nissan Rogue, and this image is taken at the Gilbert Police Department property building.
And were photographs of the sort of whole vehicle taken that we see in 94?
That's correct. This is just a different angle, as well as this is a different angle of that same vehicle.
So we see a license plate on this vehicle of CRT 2994?
Correct.
And was inside the vehicle during the search warrant, did you obtain the registration or take photographs of it?
Yes, that's correct.
And was it registered to a Lori Vallow and Alexander Cox?
Correct.
And we see it was from September of 2019?
Yes.
Inside the vehicle, did you look through it to see if there were any receipts or anything of potential interest?
Yes, we did.
Inside the vehicle, did you recover a boarding pass or luggage receipt for a Melanie Boudreau?
That's correct.
And that would have been from October 26th of 2019?
Correct.
So inside the vehicle that belonged to Lori Vallow was a receipt for a flight for a Melanie Boudreau?
Correct.
And then did you also recover some receipts reflecting, Rexburg, Idaho, or Idaho Falls here, from October 13th of 2019?
Correct.
And then October 31st of 2019?
Correct.
And again, Idaho Falls there?
Yes, that's correct.
So inside the vehicle that you recovered in December in Arizona were receipts relating to Idaho Falls, Idaho, from October of 2019?
Correct.
Were you also involved in executing a search warrant on Alex Cox's residence in December of 2019?
Yes.
Did you locate Alex Cox's Ford F-150 at that time?
That particular vehicle was present during that search warrant, yes.
It was present at the residence?
Yes.
And did that have an Arizona license plate of CPQUINT?
Yes, that's correct.
And was that vehicle located in Gilbert, Arizona?
Yes.
Was that vehicle later towed to the Gilbert Police Department?
It was.
And did a different detective later search that vehicle?
Yes.
When that vehicle was towed to the Gilbert Police Department, did you then obtain another search warrant to execute on Alex Cox's Ford F-150 on December 31st to allow a detective to remove an infotainment center?
Yes, that's correct.
And was that Detective Tom Olzak?
Yes.
And what was the reasoning for that?
The purpose of that search warrant and the assistance from Detective Olzak was to learn any information reference that electronic or infotainment device that maybe it's stored on that device reference the location of that vehicle.
And did Detective Olzak take that infotainment system with him to analyze himself?
Yes.
I have no other questions for this witness.
Cross.
Sergeant McDermott?
That's correct.
Okay. And you said that you've been processing scenes, Sergeant McDermott, for how long?
I've been a police officer for 18 years. I can't tell you exactly how long I've been processing scenes, but I've been in a patrol capacity and a detective capacity for approximately 16 of those 18 years. So I would have been processing numerous scenes for that time.
Okay, and were you a scene agent for this?
I would say I was one of several detectives there who could be classified as scene agents.
Okay. So, and you had mentioned before that it was you and Detective Pillar and one other person.
I had mentioned Detective Ferrer.
Oh, that's right, Ferrer. Okay. And when you were getting briefed by them, what time did you arrive at the scene?
I don't recall. It was sometime in the morning after the call had come out.
And who was there already when you arrived?
There were at least two patrol officers there upon my arrival.
So Officer Robb was there?
Yes.
And did she brief you at all?
I don't recall exactly who briefed me, but it would make the most sense that she would have.
Because she was first on the scene?
I don't know if she was first on the scene, but I know she was present at the time that I arrived.
Okay. And so who did you receive your information from after you got there?
Again, I don't recall specifically, but it would make most sense that Officer Robb would have provided it.
And do you recall her indicating that she didn't even think it was a gunshot?
I don't recall that specifically, no.
That she stuck her pin in the hole and said she didn't think it was a gunshot? You don't recall that?
I don't know that, no. Okay.
There was a picture that we looked at that had the one piece of glass in the street. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And then could that piece of glass have been moved by someone's shoe accidentally from people walking around in that scene?
It's possible.
Because there weren't any more pieces besides one piece of glass in the street, is that correct?
Correct.
And then was that glass in any way, that one piece of glass, was it tested to see if that was actually part of the window from the Tesla?
No.
Could you tell if it was part of the window from the Tesla?
All I could say is it appeared consistent with the other evidence we had referenced that window on scene, but I can't tell you definitively if that one shard was from that window.
Like if it was the same color as most of the other shards?
It did appear to be the same color and was consistent with the rest of the shards that we observed on scene.
But it could have been from a Coke bottle kicked in the street or anything else like that?
I can't say that's not possible, yes.
And so did you use the location of that one piece of glass to try to determine where the Tesla was located at the time of the shooting?
That was one factor, yes.
But if it had just been kicked over there or moved accidentally on the bottom of someone's shoe, then it wouldn't indicate anything. Is that correct?
I mean, I'd have to concur that it's possible.
So all the pieces of glass that fell out, would that be consistent in your understanding? Wouldn't there be more than just one tiny little piece if there was a bullet explosion?
I can't answer that definitively to tell you one way or the other. I don't know how the physics of that would happen. So I don't know if I could honestly answer that for you.
But logically, there'd probably be at least a couple pieces, right?
Object to speculation. He's already indicated he doesn't know.
Sustained.
So when you arrived, where was Mr. Boudreau?
I believe he was standing maybe outside the front door of the residence. That's my best recollection.
Okay. And who else was there on scene?
I recall Officer Robb was on scene. I believe Officer Bullock was on scene. I believe that was it.
Did you see the friends of Brandon that we saw in the picture of Mr. Boudreau?
Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead. Now that you've mentioned it, yes, I do recall Brandon having some friends there.
And how many friends do you recall Brandon having there?
I believe there were two.
And where were they when you observed them?
I don't recall that.
I mean, were they near Brandon or were they in a different location?
I don't recall specifically.
Do you recall them walking around in the midst of the scene, like in the driveway?
I don't recall that specifically, no.
So you did not observe them walking back and forth in the driveway?
I don't have any recollection of that, no.
Did you review the body cams from that day?
I have not.
You've never seen the body cam from Officer Robb?
If I have viewed it, I don't have any recollection of viewing it. So I don't have any particular recollection of watching those body cams.
Okay. Was there any glass in the garage?
Not that I recall.
Did you search the garage?
I don't have a particular recollection of searching the garage specifically. I can't tell you if it was searched or not by any other detective or officer there.
But you did not search in the garage?
No, not that I recall.
And the garage door was open when you were there?
I don't recall specifically.
With all the reports that have been made, there's no report indicating that anyone searched the garage to your knowledge. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You had mentioned in your report about it, Brandon making a U-turn and following the shooter. Is that correct?
Correct.
But in your testimony earlier, you talked about he went around the block?
That's correct.
And so which is it? I'm trying to understand where the U-turn came in.
According to our information, what I understood it to be is Brandon, after the shooting, proceeded west on Phelps to Cole Street. He went north on Cole past Waite. Slightly north, there's a community pool there. He stopped in that general vicinity. And then as the Jeep proceeded north on Cole and then east on Waite, Brandon conducted a U-turn to on Cole to then go south and then east on Waite towards Fisher, I believe is the name of the street. That is that north-south street that runs just east of Phelps.
So after he pulled over by the pool, he did the U-turn?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, so after he went on the pool, he didn't just go around the block. He turned around and went around the block?
Yes, eventually after conducting that U-turn is then when he went around the block to eventually make his way back to Phelps Street, where his residence was at.
And you indicated in a report that he followed the suspect briefly after that U-turn. Where did you get that information?
That was information we learned on scene that I believe Mr. Boudreau had passed along to officers or detectives on scene.
And you don't know who that was?
I don't know specifically who, no.
And you don't know how you obtained that information then?
That was information I learned on scene. I don't know who, in terms of which officer or detective, obtained that specifically.
But you did not hear Brandon. Brandon did not express that to you directly. It was through someone else?
I don't recall Brandon expressing that to me directly.
Okay. So in your report, you say that you were unable to locate any projectile anywhere in the Tesla. Is that correct?
We located fragments. I don't think we did not locate anything in terms of a complete projectile.
And were those fragments tested?
No.
To see if they were actually bullet fragments and not part of the Tesla?
There was no additional testing done. Those fragments appeared consistent with a projectile.
In what way are they consistent with projectile?
The projectile, in terms of it potentially, in terms of making an impact on something, could disperse in fragments. Mm-hmm. To me, they appeared consistent with other fragments of projectiles that I've observed before.
And is that something that could be known through testing?
Potentially. I can't tell you a specific test. I just don't have the knowledge if a specific test could tell, but potentially.
So in our modern world, can't they test things and find out exactly what gun it came from, that kind of thing, projectiles?
Checked again to speculation. He just said he didn't know.
Again, you can answer if you know, but if your answer is I don't know, just give your answer.
I'm sorry?
You can answer.
I don't know specifically.
But in your years of experience, have you ever tested projectiles to find out if they were actually bullet projectiles?
Generally, in terms of my experience in testing projectiles, would be more complete projectiles to try to determine if we could learn, just generally, where maybe what firearm it might have come from. But in terms of fragments, I've never personally, to my knowledge, tested anything additional in terms of fragments to learn. That's just been my experience.
And could it be known from a fragment if it was a handgun or a rifle?
Not that I know of.
So it could only be tested to find out if it was actually a bullet fragment and not actually a piece of metal from the actual Tesla.
I guess you might have to rephrase your question, make sure I can answer it accurately.
Sure. So the projectile pieces itself that we looked at?
Yes.
They can only be tested to find out if they are an actual projectile from a gun?
I don't know the limitations in terms of the testing to answer that for you accurately.
And you work for the Gilbert Police Department, is that correct?
Correct.
And they generally you would know as a detective of 18 years, like what kind of testing is available to your department, right?
Yes, generally.
And so why was it not tested or not looked into further to see what kind of bullet fragments those were, or if they were bullet fragments?
I can't answer that for you. I can just tell you that no additional testing was done.
And who, were you the one that took the fragments out? That found them?
Yes.
And what is that process like? Tell me exactly what you did, how you took them out, how that worked.
Yes, simply.
You explained it.
My recollection was just locating the fragments in that rubber molding we had observed earlier, and then just removing them and packaging them from there.
And you package them in like an evidence bag or Ziploc bag?
An evidence bag, yes.
And so how long did it take you to find those fragments?
I don't recall that.
Like more than 10 minutes?
I don't know.
And then you took those fragments out with your fingers or with a tool?
I don't recall. I think in that particular instance, my recollection is they were on that rubber molding, so I probably just removed them with a gloved hand to package them that way.
So you didn't have a tool in your hand or anything? You weren't like, I don't know what kind of tool it would be, so just asking.
I don't recall having any tools to remove that, no.
So you found those four small fragments, is that correct?
I found fragments. I don't recall how many. What I believe there were, what was ever in that particular evidence bag is what I had located.
And then they were put into an evidence bag. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then what happened to them after that?
They were impounded by Detective Ferrer.
So you handed them over to Detective Ferrer?
Yes.
And then where did it go from there? Do you know?
It was impounded at our property building.
That day?
Yes.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it. That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit nocd.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's nocd.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.